said he will be here soon, and then he can tell me how much of us to focus on, but we'll go as fast as we can. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. Okay, so Razorin asked me to talk a little bit broadly about the sources of rabbinic authority, but specifically how it manifests itself in Psak. So I won't read everything inside, but we will run through this quickly. So first, let's just start very broad. I'm sure some of you know this lamdus, but we'll get just to the basics. The source of rabbinic authority in general. So what is the source of rabbinic authority in general? It's a machloket. What do we know? So the Rambam thinks it's lotasur based on the Gemara number two. The Gemara says, my mevarech. It's asking in context of lighting Hanukkah candles, what bracha do you make? Mevarech asher k'dishan v'tavet tzivanu ladlik ner shel Chanukah. V'heichan tzivanu. And where were we commanded to light ner Hanukkah? It's only the Rabbanan Rav Avya Amar Milo Tasur from the pasuk that says, lotasur min ha'davar she'agid l'chayim in usmal. I gave it to you in three. You should not sway from the words of the Beit Din HaGadol. He quotes it from a different pasuk in Ha'azinu. The primary pasuk that is brought in Poskim is Lotasur. But if you look in number three, what is the context of the pasuk of Lotasur originally in the Torah? Specifically when there is a Sanhedrin. And even more specifically when... Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I didn't send it out. Rezimran said he sent it out. You don't send it. I can't send it out to you. I don't know. We'll continue here. But the original context then of Lotasur, first of all, is Sanhedrin, but there's something else which is important, which is Ki Palim Chadavar La Mishpat, Bin Dam Ladam Bin In Ladin Bin Egel and Ega, etc. When something is unclear to you, so then Vikamtav Alita Makom Asher and Yivchar Hashem El Gechabo, you bring it up to the place that God chose. Ubatal Kohanim Levim Veleshofer Asher Yeb By Memeim VeDarashta VeYigid Lo Chadavar Mishpat VeAsita Pi Adavar SheYigid Lo Chamen Akomahu Asher Yivchar Adonai VeShamarta LaAsut Kachol Sher Yerucha Al Pi Atara Sher Rucha VeAl Mishpat Sher Rucha Taaseh Lo Tasur Min Adavar SheYigid Lo Chayamin Usmol. So the first problem with this being a source for rabbinic authority in general is that it is talking about Sanhedrin Agadah Yoshev Yerushalayim, which is not necessarily every later authority. What is the second major problem with this source as a source for rabbinic authority? So, rabbis have in general two roles. One is legislative, the other is what? I didn't mean that. I meant in Psak. You're right, education, but it's adjudicative, right? Meaning to adjudicate cases. This is adjudication. Right, you don't know what the halacha is. You ask them; it's clarification. It's not legislation. Right, you think in Israel, whatever, things are less clear in America. Right, it's very clear. In theory, the Supreme Court only adjudicates cases; they do not determine what the law is. Right, or they don't make law; they determine what the law already is. Right, and Congress makes laws. Sanhedrin does both. But what is the context of this pasuk? It's adjudication. It's Sanhedrin functioning in their role as the Supreme Court, not in their role as Congress. Therefore, it is twice unclear that this should be the source for general rabbinic authority. One, because it's limited to the Sanhedrin Agadah Yoshev Yerushalayim, and two, it's talking about adjudication of existing law, right, specifically biblical law, and we're going to bracket that for the moment, but biblical law, existing law, but probably biblical law. Not legislation. So how can it be that the Gemara then invokes Lotasur as the source for post-Sanhedrin legislative power? So that is a problem. Nevertheless, which major Rishon, in many places, we won't go through the nuances, but which major Rishon nevertheless says that this is the source of rabbinic authority? The Rambam, right? The Rambam says this in the Sefer HaMitzvot, Lotasur Shin Yud Bet. He says it in Akdama. He says it in several places, that the source for legislative authority for post Sanhedrin power is, in fact, from this pasuk. And just to give you the formulation that he has in the Sefer HaMitzvot, Shizharnu mechaluk al ba'alei hakabelaha le'alei ha'shalom. We are forbidden from disagreeing with the ba'alei hakabelah. Okay, whatever that is, that's purposely a more generic term. The members of the tradition, the ba'alei ha'misora, and the source is Lotasur min ha'davar she'yigidu l'chayim small. Fascinatingly, in the Hakdama to the Yad, the Rambam includes in here also minhagim, right? It's not just legislation. It might even be customs. Took a while. The sources didn't go out when you sent them out. We had to... Anyways, nu. However, the Ramban challenges the Rambam. The Rambam says, that is not true. Well, at least he seems to. Specifically in the Hasagot on Sefer HaMitzvot and Shorish Aleph when defending the Bahag. And he says, and this is number six, that umikol makom klali arav mishtabshin, the Rambam's rules are mistaken. Avodavar barur aminukem mikol shibush. It's only in their interpretive capacity, right? So interpretation, adjudication, and this for this purpose are similar, obviously, because we have the Torah as our constitution, so interpretation is going to help us adjudicate cases. So in their interpretive role in the Sanhedrin, that is what is covered by Lotasur, but not post-Sanhedrin, and not legislative power. And therefore, the Ramban says that this is not the source. It is worth noting that Ala Torah, the Ramban, does seem to go in the Rambam's direction, so it's unclear what his actual position was and whether he's just playing devil's advocate for the Bahag in the Hasagot, or he actually disagrees. But there are fundamentally two positions. The position of the Rambam, who thinks the source is Lo Tasur, and the position of the Ramban, we'll call it, that says that it is not. There are many questions that are raised in the Rambam. We've already mentioned two of them, right? Which is the expansion from interpretation to legislation and from Sanhedrin to post-Sanhedrin. A major problem already in the Ramban himself is, and this is the Safik problem, is that in general we know that the rule is Safik d'oraita l'chumra, Safik d'rabbanan l'kula. Right? Rabbinic law, when in doubt, you go l'kula. Biblical law, you go Le-chumra. The problem is that according to the Rambam, all rabbinic law becomes biblical under the parameters of Lo Tasur. Now, for the Rambam, the answer, truthfully, is very easy. What's the Rambam's solution to this problem? Very good. The Rambam thinks that the distinction between Derabbanan and Daraita is itself rabbinic. Why is it in existence? Probably to distinguish between rabbinic law and biblical law, because we'll see in just a few moments. The Rambam thinks that a fundamental rule of psak is that even though the rabbis have legislative power, if they conflate their own power with biblical law, then they violate an iser d'oraita of lotasur, sorry, of bal tosif, of adding to the Torah, and therefore they must distinguish. And it's not just they distinguish in language, but they actually distinguish in law. But if that's the case, essentially, haim amru, Veheim Amru, right? And they instituted a Chumra by Daraita and not by Derabbanan. Essentially, Zohar Akiya takes this defense of the Rambam, the Shev Shmaita quotes it in number 7, that, look, the rabbis have the ability to say that. Right now, he focuses more on the rabbinic problem, right? The Ramban's problem is the other way, which is why isn't all Derabbanan? And the answer is just Heim Amru Veheim Amru. But the truth is that for the Rambam, that's more systematic, because since he thinks that Savik Daraita L'Chumra is rabbinic, then the rabbis have the right to do this. If you want to be more formal, as it's found in certain Achronim, they suggest that maybe according to the Rambam, and the Shev Shmaita develops this, maybe every Savik Darabanan, the reason that's L'Kula is really because it's, right, two levels removed, right? It's because a Savik Daraita is itself, that's more in Sveksveika. I don't want to get into Sveksveika Lumdus. For now, I should get into Sveksveika. Okay, fine, right? But Sveksveika Lumdus may be that according to the Rambam, the reason every Sveksveika is Lakula is because Safik Daraita L'Chumra is itself Safik, and therefore every Sveksveika is a Safik Dirabanan, right? And therefore it's Lakula even by the rabbi's own rules. This is as opposed to the Rajba's formulation that Sveksveika is a version of a Rove. Again, the exact parameters of that are interesting, but it's more like, look, the overwhelming evidence pushes you in that direction. The more lumdish explanation by the Achronim that celebrated that Sveksveika doesn't have a leidas ha-safek, right? That when you have a Sveksveika, we don't even relate to this question as a safek, and that's why you can be mekil, because the safek isn't even recognized. Halachically, the nafkamina, as pointed out by the Achronim right at the beginning of Tsubos, if I remember correctly, though I haven't looked at this piece since I was in 11th grade, but if I remember, there is Rav Shlomo Eger on the beginning of Tsubos, knows there's a machloket Rashi Tosfot, whether there's a chiyuv levarer by Sveksveika, right? If you can clarify by Sveksveika, so if you think there's no leidas ha-safek, so then you don't even need to clarify if you can, whereas if you think there is a leidas ha-safek, you're just allowed to be mekil, so then that would not be, then you would have to investigate if it is easy enough to be mekil. Now, very, very quickly, if the source for rabbinic legislation is not from Lo Tasur, then where does it come from? And I will throw out several possibilities for you. One is, Reb Chaim. Reb Elchanan Wasserman quotes from Reb Chaim, both in the Kovetz Shiurim and the Kuntres Divrei Sofrim, also a little bit in Bava Batra, that he thinks the Ramban does not disagree with the Rambam fundamentally. He thinks that the source is in fact Lotasur. He thinks the difference between the Rambam and the Ramban is whether it's Lotasur as a Chiyuv Klali or Prati. Meaning, according to the Rambam, he argues that every Derabanan becomes Bechefza, a mitzvah d'oraita, whereas for the Ramban, every mitzvah d'Rabbanan is in fact d'oraita, but not Bechefza. It is part of a generic value to listen to the rabbis. And therefore, it's like d'oraita, but a step removed. This is very problematic because it's not clear that the Rambam actually thinks that every d'Rabbanan becomes Bechefza, a mitzvah d'oraita, rather than that which Reb Chaim is said to have attributed to the Ramban is in fact what the Rambam believes. But it's worth noting that this svara for the Meshech Chachma is the source for Safek D'Rabbanan Lekula, right? Because according to, or at least part of it, which is that if you view the chiyuv to listen to the rabbis as a generic mitzvah and not one that creates mitzvah, meaning every time I do something, I'm not really lighting Chanukah candles on a d'oraita level, I'm listening to the rabbis. So it could be that I'm only considered violating what the rabbi said if I do it intentionally. But if it was a safek, I'm not rebelling. Right? So Meshech Chachma argues that it's sort of like, his mashal is, it is like Morid B'Malchut. Morid B'Malchut isn't not listening to the king, it's rebelling against the king. To rebel against the king, you need to know you're rebelling against the king. And therefore, if I'm not sure, it's not quite rebellion. Maybe it's infelicitous, it's not the right thing to do, but it's not rebellion. And that's why Safek D'Rabbanan is going to be Lekula, because it isn't a rebellion. There's the Meshech Chachma there on the Pasuk of Lotasur. If it's not that, then what is the source? So here you have several possibilities. The Shev Shmait, the Shari Yosher of, the Shari Yosher says, I'm going to skip around a little bit, in 11 says, listen, you don't need a source because what the rabbi says makes sense. Misvara, right? The fact that I should listen to the rabbis is misvara, and svara is itself an obligating force. How do we know that svara is itself an obligating force? So what is the best? What is the two best riot and shas that svara is itself? Or there's multiple. Throw out some. What? Good. Sometimes the Gemara just says, why do I need a kra svara, which sounds like it is itself a source. The second one, which is even more powerful, which is quoted by the Maritz Chiyot in his Akdama to shas, or to Dalit, I think, or something like that. But it was actually preceded by him in the Sefer HaBatim, Rav Dovro Kochavi, the 14th century Provençal Rishon, is the Gemara in Sanhedrin Ayin Dalet, which says that the source for Gili Arayot being Yeharik Val Yavor is a Gzeirah Shaveh from Gili Arayot to Ritzicha. But what's the source from Ritzicha that Ritzicha is Yeharik Val Yavor? Svara. Right, me Emer Dedamak Daigavra Sumaktvei. How do you know that his blood is redder than yours? Which means that not only does Svara tell you that murder is Yarg Val Yavor, it's as if it's written in the pasuk from which I can then derive Xerishave from that. Right, so Svara is very powerful. This may also be the source for Brachot, as the Pnei Yeshua notes in Brachot Lamed Hey, where we learn it from a Kal Vachomer, and he argues it might be Daraita. There are other pieces of evidence that that's the case. Shari Yoder says it's Svara. Reb Elchanan Wasserman himself has a different argument. He takes a teleological argument, right, in fancy philosophy, right, for saying that things are defined philosophically by their goal. And what makes, right, this is Aristotle's view of the world, the reason you have to be moral is because the nature of humanity is that you are a moral being, and therefore you're supposed to live up to your own telos, right, your own goal, right? Moral claims are judged by their goals. And he says, well, why do I keep the Torah? So you'll say, it's because Hashem said so. He said, that's wrong. You keep the Torah because Kol Pal Hashem L'maneihu, everything God created was for his sake. And therefore, the definition of all of the world is to exist for the sake of God. The reason I do what God said is because I was created to act for God. It happens to be that I know what it means to act for God, because God told me. But if there were other epistemic sources that would tell me what God wanted, then I would have to listen to them as well. Hence Nevuah, and hence Dirabanan, because the Chachamim know what God wants. And therefore, I'm chayiv in derabanan for the same reason I'm chayiv in daraita. Again, you can look and check me. This is source 10. So then Rav Elchanan asked the obvious question. If that's the case, then why is every derabanan not mamasha daraita? Forget ki'ilu. It is mamasha daraita because it is the same philosophical background. Namely, I now know that God wants it. So here Rav Elchanan comes up with a huge chiddush, which is that there is normative value to how many words are given to a mitzvah in the Torah. The more words it's given, the more powerful, the less words, the less powerful, and zero words is the least powerful. What's his proof? His proof is the midrashic statement that gadol sichatan shel avdei avot yoter mitoratan shel b'neihem. That because the Gemara makes the midrash makes the comment that Eliezer's story by Rivka is repeated twice, and that apparently shows that his life is more important than the Torah of the Jews later on, because all of Hilchot Shabbat is keharim atluyim b'sa'ara, is like a mountain hanging by a hair thread. That shows that the number of words given in the Torah have normative value. So if there's no words in the Torah, so it is a lesser type of daraita, and therefore that is why there is some ambiguity, even by halacha Moshe Mishinai, which has the status of daraita. It doesn't fully have the status of daraita, right? Specifically in Sfeikot, it doesn't quite occupy the space of daraita. You can read his theory there. It's a very interesting theory. That is possibility. I don't know what number I'm up to. Rabbeinu David, not in Pesachim, which everyone knows, but in Sanhedrin. Where in Sanhedrin? We don't actually have Rabbeinu David in most of the Sanhedrin, but we do on about a third of Sanhedrin in that Sanhedrin Ketana collection. So this was the first year I heard when I was in Gush by Rav Bednarsh in 2006, was this Rabbeinu David. The Rabbeinu David says that basically all the Rabbanans, your chayav mi, based on a neder, that Klal Yisrael accepted communally some sort of neder at Har Sinai, and that is what binds you to Dirabanan. These are all very interesting theories. There are interesting expressions of this. So, for example, Rav Haigon, I gave it to in 13, has a shocking statement quoted by the Ravid in the Tumim Deim, where Rav Haigon was asked, what happens if there is a machloket between Minhag and the Gemara? Which do you follow? So we all grew up that you follow the Gemara. Rav Haigon says, not at all. That's completely crazy. He says, how could it be? You know why? Because he says, first of all, the Gemara tells you when you have a suffix in halacha, what do you do? Puk chazi mayam adavar. Look what people are doing. Second of all, he says, why do you listen to the Gemara at all? Because that's the minhag. What made the Gemara binding was minhag. And therefore he says, achar kach, after I looked at what people did, only then do I look at Gemara, and I, if there's a machloket, eino okeret ha'ikar. The Gemara cannot uproot the ikar, which is minhag. Right? What people do and what we've accepted is more powerful than the Gemara, because the reason we listen to Gemara to start with is we accepted it. So those are a few other theories as to the source of rabbinic power. Now this is very nice in Lamdus, but let us talk about how this gets very relevant quickly. So we now know that despite all this unclarity, Lotasur is applied by the Rambam to post-Sanhedrin, non-interpretive moments, right? To legislative post-Sanhedrin. And rabbinic power in general is justified by these other models, which presumably can be applied to post-Sanhedrin. Because whatever we accepted, we accepted. Whoever we think channels God's wisdom, channels God's wisdom. Whatever is Mechayev Misvara is Mechayev Misvara, etc. Yeah. Good. So that is exactly what I'm going to ask now. The next question is, okay, but what continues this? So, Ray Zimmerman told me to leave out the stuff about the Bavli. So I'm going to leave out how this leads to Bavli, right? But that's a very interesting question of how basically the Bavli takes on this status, which it may or it may not, right? If it does, right, the Kesem Mishnah thinks it does, but only because we accepted it. This seems to be the position of Reb Chaim as well in two places. Quoted by Rav Elchanan, it's possible the Chazon Ish thinks that the Bavli just knew the truth, and that's why you're obligated to listen to the Bavli, because it is the truth. I'm going to leave that for a moment, because it's a fascinating story, but I was told to leave it out. So if you want more Makar, I can send it later. But for my purposes, the even more important question is, okay, let's establish that we're willing to, however we get there, take the notion that the Bavli, maybe the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, depending on which Rishonim you hold like, takes on this status of Sanhedrin, Agadah Yoshev Yerushalayim, however you get there conceptually. Okay, so we have to listen to the Bavli. Again, that's very interesting, Lumdishly. But does any of this have anything to do with Psak? So there is a, for some reason, not so well-known Raifid that's quoted by the Ritva in Shabbat Kuflamet, and this is source 8. The Gemara, the Ritva there is commenting on what's going on in the beginning of, right, Perek Yerlazer Demila. What? This is source 8. There's the Ritva quoting the Raivid in Shabbat Kuflamet, beginning of the Perek Yerlazer Demila. What is going on in the beginning of Perek Yerlazer Demila? The Gemara is celebrating the power of Mara D'Atra. Or the Gemara is bringing all different shitot that most of the Tanaim felt that you're not allowed to be Mechal Shabbat for Hechsheire Mila, only for Mila itself. The Elazar disagreed. And then it goes through a whole bunch of other cases that most of Chazal thought that chicken and milk was Aser, but Rabbi Yossi Aglili thought it was Mutter. And then, in the place of Elazar, they were Samech and Elazar, and they would do what, according to everyone else, was Chilul Shabbat. And according, in the place of Rabbi Yossi, they would do whatever, according to everyone else, is Basar Bechala. And the Gemara says, and nevertheless, because they followed their rabbi, they were blessed, and it was great for them, and it celebrates the power of Mara D'Atra. You look at this and you say, why? Why is this so great? Why is it so great to listen to your Mara D'Atra? Why does he have so much power? And the Ravid says, very simple. Shenotena Kadosh Baruch Hu Alkiyam Lav Lotasur. Lodiach HaSchar is telling you the schar of listening to Lotasur. So the Ravid says, you want to know where it comes from? Forget the Chiddush that Lotasur expands the authority of the rabbis from the Sanhedrin to Nagid Chazal as a group. No, your local Orthodox rabbi, your Mara D'Atra, is now somehow invested with the power of Lotasur. The Chevin Yerilazar Roi Laharai Haya, since Yerilazar was capable of paskening, calls Manshlo Nifsika Halacha Rashan Lasor Kedivrei Atzman. Now he puts a caveat. He says as long as it wasn't Nifsak against him, you're allowed to follow him. And in fact, his power comes from Lotasur. Right? Now that is quite a radical shift, right? Because that means it's not just Sanhedrin. It's not just the consensus body of Klal Yisrael, which is how the Rif and the Rambam, according to the Kesef Mishnah, and the Smag all think the Bavli got its authority, was consensus authority. Ravid has none of it. The Ravid says, no, your local Orthodox rabbi is somehow invested with the power of Lotasur. And that is also the position of the Chinuch, maybe not your local Orthodox rabbi, but at least the Gadol Hador in every generation. So you look at the Sefer Chinuch N9, this is mitzvah Tav Tzadi Hei, on the mitzvah L'Shmuel Mikol Beit Din HaGadol, Sh'amdu Lein Shabbat Chol Zman, the mitzvah to listen to every Beit Din HaGadol in every time. Then he says, Zman, this is Noheged B'chol Mitzvah Chol Zman, She'akol mitzuvin la'asod kol l'chol asher yoru u'b'chol ha'mitzvah gamgen l'shmol la'asod b'chol zman u'zman kimitzvat ha'shofet. Included in the primary mitzvah lotazur is to listen to every judge, kol mara chacham ha'gadol asher b'neinu b'zmaneinu. Including your posek in your generation, like the Gemara says, v'al ha'shofet asher yeh b'ayim imahem, yiftach b'daro kishmol b'daro, kol mara shemitzvah leinu l'shmol b'kol yiftach b'daro kimo l'shmol b'daro. Right, so again, there are so many chidushim that have happened here, right? But the Ravid and the Chinuch, and the Ritva seems to accept this, assume that whatever you think about the source of rabbinic authority in general, it's not just Sanhedrin, it's not just the consensus body of Klal Yisrael, it is either the Gadol Hador, according to Chinuch, or even your own personal Mara D'Atra is invested with the power of Lotasur, according to the Ravid. Okay, if you're interested, I gave you some other things. I'll just show you some of the things here. I gave you a few interesting sources in Rav Kook about the power of Kabbalat Ha'uma. You can look at that at your own time. A fascinating machloket between the Chazon Ish and Rechonon Wasserman, whether once we've given authority to a body, specifically the Gemara, can you rescind it? Right, you can look there as well if you want. Those are the igrot; they go back and forth between Rabbi Chanan and the Chazon Ish over the Kuntres Tivrei Sofrim. Very interesting material there. A very interesting nafka mina before we get to the main question, which is what does this tell us about Psak in general? And I gave it to you in 16. I will not read the whole thing. Is the following: as I mentioned before, the Rambam holds that If you misrepresent a derabbanan is d'oraita, you have violated Baal Tosef. And that's the difference, right? The difference between a legitimate derabbanan and a law, an extra law on top of the Torah, which violates the fundamentals, right? Baal Tosef, it adds to the Torah, is whether or not you're clear that what you're doing is introducing rabbinic legislation, or whether you pretend that is d'oraita, okay? It happens to be not everyone agrees with the Rambam. If you look in the Minhage Maharil and the Likutim in Ot Ayin, he seems to think that that which the Rambam thinks is Baal Tosef, he calls Asmachta, that Asmachta is the rabbis trying to trick you so that you will be Machmir. The Prima Gadim is in his Pticha Cholelet and Aleph Chaf says that Suffolk Asmachta is Lechumra. And Rabbi Yosef Engel in the Beit HaOtzar in Tzadi Gimel Dalet, I think, says what could possibly be the Svara. So his first Hava Mina is based on this Maharil, which is if you think like the Rambam that Suffolk Darabanan is Lekulaz, but only because the rabbis chose to set it up that way. Well, if they chose to pretend that a Darabanan is Daraita, then clearly they aren't choosing to do that, and just like they chose to make Safik Daraita L'chumra, they could choose to make Safik Darabanan L'chumra. Right? And that's what they're doing by Asmachta, but then Rabbi Yosef Engel says that's crazy, can't be that's what's going on, and he justifies it instead based on the Ritva's version of Asmachta in Rosh Hashanah Ted Zion, that Asmachta is really a God suggesting a halacha, but not mandating it, but it actually comes from God. The Ein Kan Makom L'Harich. But the Rambam, at any rate, thinks that Baal Tosef is when I present a Dirabonon as a D'oraita. Now, what about one of you? You become the God L'Ador, and now there's something that you think is Usser. Sorry, you think it's Mutter, but you think it's a bad idea policy-wise. Is it Usser for you to say, this is Usser? And are you allowed to pretend that your policy decision is a halachic one? So if you look in 16, rabbis, doctors, both rabbis, doctors, Frimmer, what? Potentially, yes, right? Meaning the Maharil would clearly think it's not a problem, or maybe it would. I don't know. Maybe he thinks it's only, I don't know. Well, no, the Maharil doesn't believe in this whole thing, meaning according to the Rambam. Well, what? Maharil? A Marshal. Marshal. Yeah. So maybe Marshal's Ziofatora thing would apply here, maybe, right? Who thinks that Ziofatora is Yard Valyavor and very, yeah, not Maharil. Maharil thought it's no problem even for Chazal. But is it, and this is a major question in Psak, right? Because you'll see this all the time, right? You'll see people who say something is Usser and people will accuse them of not meaning it's Usser, but meaning that they think it's a bad idea, but they don't want to admit that because then it's you against me, right? You'd rather pretend it's Psak. Is that Usser, or is it actually a good thing? So they summarize a very, very long discussion. You can read it there. But Rav Henkin argues, among the things in this, that it might hang on this question. Because if you think that every posek post-Talmud is invested with the power of Lotasur, then what comes with that is the limitations of Lotasur. And if you are invested in the power of creating Torah, then just like Chazal were forbidden from pretending that that which they were doing was not legislation but was a right to law, then you, invested with the power of Lotasur, cannot pretend. It's not just a bad idea policy-wise, but you violate an Isser d'oraita if you are disingenuous. If, however, you think that Lotasur is only in Chazal, right, Sanhedrin or Chazal or whatever, and you are doing something else, that modern poskim do not have that authority, so then it might be that it's actually legitimate to do this. This might be a legitimate way of doing it. And there were many poskim, especially post the fight, well, part of the fight with reform, who thought that not only could you do this, but you should do this. And many of the more radical students of the Chatam Sofer made this basically their modus operandi, was to take things that were probably not Usser, Ikra Adin, and make them into Isurei D'oraita, most famously in the 1874 Psak, known as Psak Din of Michalovcha, which was basically a group of the students of the Chatam Sofer, primarily Rabbis Akiva Schlesinger and Rabbi Hillel Lichtenstein, who got together and basically explained why all the things that the Neo-Orthodox, or whatever they call them, right, what they call the Neo-Orthodox, meaning basically the Germans, the world of Rav Hirsch and Rav Hildesheimer and the like, were violating Yisurim Daraita by speaking the vernacular and dressing in normal clothing, etc., etc., and they were following the Chatam Sofer, which in one place actually does seem to imply, that does seem to say you should do this actively, right, that you should try to make everything that is otherwise, look like it's a Daraita, and there is, of course, much support for this as a methodology, right, so for example, in the first Tshuvot HaGaonim, I think, right, Rav Sadri Gaon famously claimed that Yom Tov Sheni was Daraita, it was Halacha Moshe Misinai. And Rav Haigon says, either he didn't mean it, or he meant, right, either he never said it, or he meant it, but only as polemics against the Karaites, right? If Rav Haigon is right, then Rav Sadri Gaon is clearly holding you're allowed to do such things. Rav Haigon himself did not like it. So you already see this tension going back to the Gaonim, in the Rishonim, in the Achronim, but whether you have that responsibility may hang on this question, whether you are vested with the power of Lotasur or not, because if you're not vested in the power, then your psak doesn't matter enough, right, to run that risk. Now, it might be, as Rabbi's Frimmer note in that article, that even if you think it's not Baltosif, it is usser because of lying. And then that gets to a different question, whether you're allowed to lie in psak, was a very complicated sugya based on the closing sugyot in Psachim, where the Gemara at some point says that if you need Yitle B'ilan Gadol, hang your psak on a gadol, which at least according to some Rishonim means you should lie and pretend, right? That if I'm very convinced something's usher, but no one's listening to me, I should say, I heard it b'shem the Rav, right? And someone will say, where's it written down? I don't know. I heard it b'shem the Rav, right? I don't know. People do that. According to some of the Rishonim and Achronim, that is legitimate. You're totally allowed to do that. Oh, I see. I did give you the stuff on the Bavli. Okay, I'm not going to read it, but you can see I did give you the stuff on the Bavli in sources. Thought I took it out, but I did not, which I guess is good. You have reading material, sources 18 through 25, where I put, I think, four or five theories as to why we accepted the Bavli. Okay, but now we're going to skip all the way down to 26. Yeah. Presumably that would be fine, right? Because usher is generic enough, I assume, right? I think. I don't know. Does usher automatically say it's usher, or is it usher because, it's usher to do something which is, ein ruach hacham nocha imenu? You could probably do something like that, but you couldn't say this is usher because name an usher, right? Now, again, this is interesting because there's a long misara of poskim thinking that you can do things like that, that you don't have to be honest in psak actively. Right, the Rama famously in Tarat Chatat said that not by chumrut but by kulot, that's what he does. Right, is that he does not tell you the truth. Right, that he says that there are many times b'sharat chak that really the halacha is lakula, but the minog is to be machmir, to be choshesh for the more stringent positions. However, he doesn't. If there's a sharat chak, so then he's lenient because the ikar din is lenient anyways. But instead of trying to explain this to balabatim, he makes up kulot. So he said, he'll say things like, it's mutter mishum kavod shabbat. Now that, he said, that's not a real thing. No, nothing is mutter mishum kavod shabbat. He's like, but it sounds better, right? If I start explaining to them, it's really mutter, but we should be choshesh, they're not going to listen, forget it, they're not going to understand what I'm saying. So I just make it up. I just say, mutter mishum kavod shabbat, mutter mishum this. And he just said, that's what he writes in the Ramah. He tells you in Tarat Chata, that is what he is doing. Right, now again, that's not quite the same, right? It's not something new. It's sort of hiding behind a veil. It's also interesting that he doesn't assume that Balabatim will ever read Tarat Chata, right? You can only write something like that. You couldn't write that nowadays. If you wrote, I am dishonest because people can't handle the truth, they will find out, right? One of the amazing things is to think about, and I'll just throw this out there, one of the crazy things in Psak you have to realize is that the very technological assumption, the assumptions that are based on technology that the Ramah had, you can't assume that if it was okay for the Ramah, it's okay for us, because his reality was so clearly different in terms of accessibility to what he wrote. He's just assumed he wrote this. It wasn't like a private Masorah. It's not like nowadays. Can you turn off the oven using the stove, using the knobs in Shabbos? So everyone knows that there's a Masorah al peh from Rav Moshe Feinstein that you're allowed to because he thinks it's only a grama, right? And it's not even a grama. You're cutting off fuel. It's not mechabeh. And he hints at it in Shua, but he never wrote it down anywhere, right? So why can no one ever find it in writing? Because he didn't write it down, right? Because if he'd written it down, someone would have found it. And he wanted it to be oral. He wanted it to be because of amorphous. The Rama wrote it down in a book and published it and assumed no Balabas would ever figure out that he was doing. He wrote it down, right? That is a crazy assumption, right? Not a crazy assumption. It would be crazy for us to make that assumption because you know that's not going to happen. Right? And that's very important. Because just because a certain policy was taken by certain poskim a few hundred years ago, you have to think what was driving their assumption. And if our assumption cannot be like that, if we can't make the same assumptions, then we can't do the same things. Or at least we have to weigh whether the same policy that they had is good for us. Not because the Rama was wrong bismano, right? But because the Rama was living in a different universe than we are. Okay, close parentheses. But since I'm talking about Pesach in general, that is something you should keep in mind. Okay, how does this move to Pesach? So, if I ask you, why is it that you have to listen to your own posek when you ask a shayla? Really, there's two aspects to this, right? One is, why do you have to listen to the person to whom you ask a shayla? And the second is, are you bound to someone in particular before you ask a shayla? We're going to start with the first one, which is, why is it, or is it the case that when I ask a shayla, I am bound by that Pesach? So, the Gemara says as follows, and this is in 26. Gemara Nevo Jezara, Dav Zayin, Ten Rabbanan. If I asked a chacham and he said something was impure, you cannot ask a chacham for him to say it is tahor. If you asked a chacham and he forbade it, you cannot ask someone to permit it. If there are two people, echad mitameh, echad mitaher, you ask two people simultaneously, one said yes, one said no. Echad oser, echad matir. If one of them was greater than the other, holech acharav, then follow him. V'imlav holech achar hamachmir. If not, you follow the stringent position. However, the normative position is that introduced by Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, b'shal ha-Torah, b'shal Torah holech achar hamachmir, b'shal sofrim holech achar hamekel. That by Daraita you go lechumra, derabanan you go Kula. Now, you would think that this doesn't come up just like this, but it actually does. I'll give you a practical case that came up. Apparently, it was right before my time, but I've heard this several times from people who got this answer from Rav Lichtenstein. Someone once asked Rav Lichtenstein, Rebbe, what do I do on Yom Tov Sheni? But he said, I'm not asking you what to do on Yom Tov Sheni for a Ben Chutz La'aretz night. That's not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you the following. I have two rebbeim in life, you and Rav Amital, and I already know in advance your answers. I know that you say day and a half, and Rav Amital says a day. So what am I supposed to do? If I didn't know already, I could ask B'tmimut, and whichever one I asked, I would have listened. But now it's disingenuous, right? You're both my rebbeim. What am I going to do? Right? Which of you do I ask the Shaila to? And what did Rav Lichtenstein tell him? Ask Rav Amital, because it's Gemara. The Gemara says, if you have two people, one says Aser, one says Mutter, and it's a Dirabanan, you go by the Mekil, which means that if your two Rebbeim are me and Rav Amital, and you know what we say, then you follow the more Mekil position. You follow Rav Amital, not me. Right? That's a Meta. Right? That is a Meta Psak, right? But it's Yotzei from the Gemara. So the Gemara says that if you ask a Shaila, you cannot ask someone else. Why can you not ask someone else? Now, another place where this comes up is the Gemara in Eruv and Davav, where the Gemara says that you have to either follow Hillel Kikula Ehon Vekuchum Rehon, or Beit Shammai Kikula Ehon Vekuchum Rehon. You can't Kula shop or Chumra shop, right? If you Kula shop, you are evil. If you Chumra shop, you are a Ksil Bachoshech Oleich. You are an unenlightened one walking in darkness. But why do you have to listen to, right, or why? So it's interesting. Gemara doesn't say you have to listen. It just says you can't ask someone else, right? So we have to be very careful, Right? But why shouldn't you ask someone else? So why would you think, right? Why can't you ask someone else once you've asked a Shaila? What? Okay, good. So we'll call that Kava. Right? One possibility is it's Kava, which is not right. It's Pasnist, right? I asked Rulachim Sin, I'm not going to go ask Rami Tawa, right? It's not right. Right? It's just not Kavod. And that seems to be the position of Rashi in number 29. Velo Chaza, he's talking about a slightly different case, right? The Gemara in Nida, Dav Chaf, that Ula Ikla la Pumpadita, Ula was visiting Pumpadita, Aitul Kmei Dama Velo Chaza, he brought him Dam Nida, and he wouldn't look at it. And he said, Oma, Realazar Demara da Ara di Yisrael Ave. Realazar was the Mara da Atra of Eretz Yisrael, Ki Mikla la Atra de Yehuda, when we visited Yehuda's place, Lo Chazi Dama, he wouldn't look. He wouldn't do Maro. I should look at it here in his place. I'm not going to do it. And Rashi says the reason is kavod. Right? The reason is kavod. It's just not right. And as many of the Rishonim and Achronim also think, that's not just true in the Sugya about Maradatra, but as you see in 30 in the Ran, he thinks the same thing is true. At least part of the reason why once you've asked a Shaila, you can't ask someone else. However, right, it's important to know, right, that in the Gemara says, Hanishal lechacham v'timei lo yishal lechacham v'itaher, which is an iser on the shoel. But if you look at the Ran says kavod, but not on the nishal, but on the shoel. Right, he says, chacham sha'asar ein chaver rashai latir, below askamato shel rishon. Right, the first posek is not allowed to weigh in without permission from the first, from the second posek can't weigh in without permission from the first one. V'pnei kvodol shel rishon, because of honor. Now, he already tells you the first nafka minute thing, it's only kavod, is that you can solve the kavod issue through a little bit of transparency, right? A little bit of permission, right? It's not fundamental. Right? Another posek wants to weigh in, he can, as long as you say what's going on, the second posek takes it up with the first posek, it's no problem, it's an honor issue. Okay? He does give a second reason, though, is va'od k'deisha lo tiret tarot k'shtei tarot, halal osun v'halal matirin. The other is an even more fundamental problem, which is it creates an optics issue of shtei tarot. Right? If I'm asking the same shayla to two people, and I get an osur and a mutter, that is the most intense way of showing that the Torah is two tarot. Right? It's not just in theory, there are people who are mekel and people who are machmir. It's I asked two people a particular Shaila and got two different answers. Right? That is the problem. That issue, I'm not sure how much that's solved by asking permission from the original posek. If the original posek changes his mind, yes. But if he doesn't change his mind, but allows you to follow a different one, that's already getting iffy. Okay. The second formulation is you have to be very careful. Some people conflate these, but you have to be very, very careful. I think I've mentioned this in the past. Muke Yosef and the Ravid say the following. Muke Yosef says, Kevan Shesha'al Mimenu Tchila, once I asked the first posek, Gamar Bilibo La'asot Kechol Asher Yore Oto. I have committed to following his psak. Something like a neder. Okay? So the second possibility is, why do I have to follow psak? Because so did I commit. Now, what would be the most radical way of expressing that this is a neder? What? So one would be Mevik and Matir neder, and the Ravid says something even more radical. The Miri quotes the Ravid is saying in 32, Afim Chazar Harishon Tzarech LaHachmir. Even if the first posek would change his mind and say it's mutter, too bad. I have to keep the original psak, even though the posek I asked changed his mind. Doesn't matter. The Miri said this is crazy. Right, because even if you think it's a neder, maybe it's a neder to follow this posek, not to follow the words he said at the moment I asked him. Right, what is that? But the Ravid clearly holds this is a neder. Otherwise, you couldn't hold such a position. The Ritva is often conflated with this, but the Ritva says something else. The Ritva in 33 says as follows. Just look at the bolded part. Go back. go back to the beginning, and then we'll come to this in a second. He says on the third line, the chayvan de kama chacham, since the first posek was a chacham, v'ra'ui lahora'an, he had the power of psak, kishahoru aler la'asor, when he ruled that it was asur, o litum'ah, shav ye chaticha de isura. He made it a piece of isur. So now, some people think that the Ritva holds what? The Ravid holds. But he doesn't. Right? Ah, good. Hold that thought for 1 second. First, let's distinguish the Ritva and the Ravid, and then we'll get to Ari's point. Okay. Does the Ritva say the same as the Ravid? No. He doesn't say Shavye Anaf Shei Chaticha Di Isura. He says Shavye Chaticha Di Isura. He made it Asur. Okay, what exactly does that mean? So, first, let me give you a theory of what it means, then we tell you a nafkamina, then I'll get to Ari's point, okay? First, a theory of what it means, okay? You could have different theories, but I will share with you Shaul Yisraeli's. Shaul Yisraeli points to the source for this being 34. The Ritva famously holds. The Gemara says, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim. Both positions are the words of the living God, or the living words of God, however you want to render that sentence. What does that mean? So, some Mefarshim think that what does Elu Ve'elu mean? They're both valuable in pursuit of the truth. Or they were both involved to both get schar. Okay? But certain Rishonim and Achronim think that what does Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim mean? That even metaphysically in Shamayim, there is halachic pluralism. God himself actually has multiple truths laid out in front of him. Right? There are actually multiple possible Torah truths. Right, that's what the Ritva quotes from Rabbeinu Tzarfat. Specifically, this appears in Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz. He says, Shalu Rabbeinu Tzarfat Zal. The Bali Tosfos asked, Hey, Ech Efshar Shushneim Divrei Elokim Chayim. How could this be? Zosef Zematir. V'tertzu kishe Allah Moshe L'marom L'kabel Torah. And they said that when Moshe went to Shamayim to get the Torah, Heru lo kol davar v'davar memtet panim li'isur memtet panim le'heter. He showed them 49 ways to be matir, 49 ways to be meikil. The shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Moshe said, ask God, what is this? V'amar she'ze masur l'chachmei Yisrael. He said, this shows you the Torah is given to chachmei Yisrael, v'chol dor v'dor, v'yachra k'motam, v'nachonu l'fi adrash v'derech ha'emet, yesh tam v'yisod v'davar. This is true, via pshat, and also in Kabbalah, there's more to know about this. I don't know what that is, but b'seder gamor. It's number 34, this is Erevin Yud Gimel Amud Bet in the Ritva. Rishol Yisraeli, and I gave you the whole piece later on this Mekarochit. I am not reading it because we'll never get it out of here if I try to read all of it. It is like, I don't know, 10 pages? I don't know. Amud Ayemini Simen Vav, which is the authority of the chief rabbinate of Israel, he makes the following claim. He says, listen, let's follow the calculus. According to the Ritva, there is no objective truth as to whether something is asur or mutter. Both possibilities are true for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what makes it that I have to follow a particular psak? So what does he say? The Torah gave it to the Chachamim. So Rav Yisraeli suggests that's what a psak is. What is Shav Yechaticha Yisrael? It means literally that in theory, in Shamayim, it could be asur or it could be mutter. And the moment you ask a psak, you have now granted authority to this posek to determine your metaphysical halachic reality. And now it is usur, or it is, well, we'll see. It is usur. Ari's point in 1 second, right? It is usur. Okay? There are a lot of nafkaminas to this question. Halacha l'maisa. So I'll give you the first time I really thought about the difference carefully between the Ritva and the Ravid was I was talking to Ray Willig of the following Shaila. Okay? It was just after Ur and I got married. A Nida Shaila came up. Ura was talking to a Yoetzet Halacha. Right? And I was close to Ray Willig. I happened to ask Ray Willig the Shaila as well the next day for curiosity. I was learning Nida anyways. I wanted to know his opinion. Okay? The Yotze Al-Achad ruled Lichumra. Said this was Usr. Okay? Ray Willig thought it was Mutter. So now what was the problem? Problem was as follows. usually when you ask a Yoetzet Halacha question, she will tell you, right, this is what my wife will say, this isn't psak. It's not psak. It's etzah. We're not functioning as poskim. Right? That's why if a woman has a particular posek, so the Yoetzet is often a go-between. Right? Right? And they'll say, which posek do you want to follow? I'm not poskening, but you don't want to, I'll talk it out with you. You don't want to go to the rabbi, I'll go for you, okay? So, but we had already asked the Shaila to this Yoetzet Halacha, and she said, Aser. So, now what happens, right? Can I change it? Sorry, Willig said, well, let's do the analysis. If you pasken like the Ravid, you couldn't change your mind, because it's not about what she thought she was doing, it's what you thought you were doing. And you thought you were asking a Shaila. But if you follow the Ritva, the posek, the person answering the question, needs to think that they were doing is psak. Because otherwise, you can't invoke the magic of shav yechaticha di yisura. And if you ask the Yoetzet and she says, I wasn't poskening, I was giving eitzah, and then you go and ask Rai Willig, right, and he's giving psak, then he's the one issuing psak. He is invoking this metaphysical power. And he said, if you thought it was Shavi Anafshe, asking someone a question without them thinking with psak might be binding. But it's Shavye Chaticha de Yisura, the person poskening needs to think that what they're doing is poskening. And therefore you're not bound, and therefore you can be Mekil. Right? That was right, Willig psak, which was fascinating. Right? But, yes. Yes, and nevertheless, right? Now, it happened to be this got more complicated because then when she heard the Rai Willig's Mekel, she's like, oh, really? Rai Willig's Mekel? Then I'm Mekel. So that complicates things. According to Ravid, that wouldn't help, right? But yes, right? This was a very interesting claim by Rai Willig. And again, I'm not sure this is true in every case. It was a very interesting analysis. But it is the case, right? That if someone isn't, right? If someone, now we'll see more normal nafkaminas rather than like this very lumdish thing, but this happens a lot. So, the more normal one would be, what if I asked someone, I told them I'm not asking for psak, I'm asking for their opinion. Right? I want to know what you think. Right? So then, this is going to be true l'kulei alma, right? But according to this svar, it makes a lot of sense. That's not binding. Yes, sorry. Halavai can get there today. We'll see whether I get there today. Okay? But hold that thought.
What was that last one again? You said, I'm asking for opinion.
I'm asking your opinion. I want to know, in lumdus, what do you hold? Or in theory, I'm writing an article. What? It wouldn't, meaning that, probably according to everybody, is not going to be binding, right? But according to this svar, it makes a lot of sense, because even though I now know his position, I didn't enter into the point where I asked for a child. I asked for a psak. I asked for a lumdish position that doesn't create this. Now, that happens to be that according to all postim, that's probably fine, right? Within kavo, you might at least have to acknowledge that's what you're doing, right? Within the others, you have to know in your own head. You don't necessarily have to tell them that's what you're doing, right? Which is enough, Kamina. Right, if it's about kavod, you have to be upfront about this. Right, if it's about like this metaphysical thing or your commitment, it's what's going on in your head. Do I think I'm asking for a psak or not? Right, regardless of whether they know. Now, it might also be the right thing mishum kavod. Right. Now, Ari asked a very good question, which is, okay, is this true only lechumra, or is it even true lekula? Meaning, once someone has something, it is mutter. Is it? Can you go the other way? So the Achronim traditionally say as follows. The Achronim say, well, if it's about kavod, it's still not kavod for me to go chumrah hopping either. What, you don't trust me? Right? That's also not right. But if it's about shavye chaticha di yisura, or shavye anavshe chaticha di yisura, well, you can't create a chalois shem heter, can you? Right? I can create an isur, but maybe I can't create a heter. So if I ask someone, he says it's mutter. So then I could go, if I want to go chumrah hopping, I could. However, and this is what most Achronim say, is enough to be of this. It happens to be that this is wrong. This is just simply wrong. If you look at the Ritva, and this is pointed out by Rav Henkin, I gave you the entire tshuva by Rav Henkin later on in this packet. The Ritva, and this is the bolded part, says it is not true. Right? And he thinks, right, the Ritva does think there is such a thing as a chalot shem heter. He thinks that there's such a thing, and this is what Rav Henkin points out, it's not true. According to the Ritva, the simple pshat in the Ritva is that if you really hold this, it's not just that he can create a metaphysical status of Chumrah. He can actually create a metaphysical status of Kula, that it is now impervious to being ossered for you. Right? And you can again, what number did I give you this? What number? 47. You can see just how long this is. I gave you, this is tshuva, it is chelek gimel tshuva chet in b'nei banim. It's an extensive halacha. Anything you ever wanted to know about this topic, it goes from what, page 14 to page 20 in single space. Okay? But now, it used to be that unless you had a hard copy, I had to, this now, it is both on Svaria and the new Bar Ilan. So, you know, B'nai Banim is now easier to access. But what are nafkamina? So as I said, one potential nafkamina is it true even by Heter? And as I said, many of the Achronim assume, despite what is the simple implication of the Ritva, that if you hold Kavod, you can't go Chumrah hopping either. But if it's about a Chaloshem Isser, then it's only an Isser, not an Heter. That's not totally clear. Another potential nafkamina the Achronim say is, what if it's a Psak without a Cheftza? It's a question that entails a Gavra. Okay, right? Meaning, I'm not asking, is this kosher? I'm asking whether I can do something. Right? Is it possible that this is limited to shailas, that there's a chefta shalisser? Because if you think shav yechaticha, like what? Can I create a chalos in a gavra? Again, I'm not convinced that this is true, but some of the achronim think that this is true. Again, another nafkamina is, what happens if I ask for an opinion without telling them I'm asking for an opinion, right? If I'm asking for an opinion, I'm telling them only ask for an opinion, that's okay according to everybody. But if I ask an opinion, right, for an opinion, but I don't tell them, so it's still a violation of kavod, right? But if I didn't think I was entering into a psak, then I'm not entering into a psak. I mean, maybe I shouldn't have done it, but it doesn't bind me. And even if the posek I talked to thought they were posking for me, but that's not how I entered into this situation. And you look at me quizzically, but yeah, what is pointed out, and this is pointed out in some of the longer sources at the end, the B'nai Banim, and this emerges the B'nai Banim from an Israeli. The chiddush of this topic is that the simple pshat is that what makes a psak binding is the fact that I asked the shayla to this posek. The layman, as it were, has a tremendous amount of authority, has a tremendous amount of power, meaning the choice of who to choose as a posek is what determines what will bind him or her. And it is not objective. Now, the complicating factor here is questions like, what if I have a Rebbe Muvak or I have a Maradatra and therefore there's a default to whom I am supposed to ask? So that's a different question, right? That's already more complicated. Right, because then there is someone I'm supposed to ask, right, or I'm already in the habit of asking, and maybe their authority is going to take effect. But that would be in a case where I legitimately have one maradatra or one posek. If I don't, then that's not really going to happen. And for many people, they don't. Right, some people do, or maybe they have multiple. Right, they have a posek who they ask their need the shaylas to, and they have a posek they ask their kasher shaylas and their Shabbos shaylas. Or they have the posek they ask on Shabbos and the posek they're asked the rest of the week, right? Is that if a shaila comes up on Shabbos, I ask this person because I can access them, right? But if it's during the week and I can call somebody, then I always ask my Rebbe, right? It could be, right? You could create situations, but we're not going to have time today, which is defining Maradatra and defining Rebbe Muvak for these purposes, especially in a globalized world where there isn't necessarily, right, where our default community is not necessarily geographic. Okay, if you want more Ricardo than that, I'm happy to send, right? But that is one of the complicating factors in the modern world, right? Is that the default in many contexts would have been Maradatra, but not everyone has a Maradatra, and even is, it's not nearly the Atra, right, of the place. But another very important thing to think of in this context, and again, we cannot get through everything inside, but I gave you plenty of Ricardo you can look at. This question of Kula and Chumrah, I gave you several sources here. You can see this discussion in Rav Kibbe Eger. the notion that you're allowed to ask another chacham and say, I asked another chacham, I want another opinion, that's already quoted in the Rush, that's quoted in Tosfot. Tosfot, however, in Nida, introduces the following. Tosfot says, well, wait a second. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Zayin says that if I ask a shayla, I can't ask someone else. The Sugya in Nida says that Ula wasn't willing to paskin. What does that show you? So according to him, he reads both Sugyot in light of the Gemara in Nida. And he thinks that these aren't two things. Really, the primary answer we've been assuming until now is on the Shoel. It's not. It's on the Nishal. Right, so Tosfot in 36 says, V'yish lomar, look, dikpeda, this is the last two lines, lo havya shoel ela achacham. This entire issue is not really, it's not that Psak is binding on you. It's that other poskim are bound to not interfere when other people have paskin. And Tosfot thinks that's primary. It's not really an isra on the nishal. Most assume that's not true. Most assume tzvei dinim. Right, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is focusing on the shoel. Gemara in Nida is focusing on the nishal. Which tells you that there's limitations on the posek, there's limitations on the shoel. Again, the Rush in 37 says explicitly, if I ask for an opinion, that's fine. I can do that. I can ask for an opinion, that's fine. Similarly, the poskim assume, and we can talk about whether this fits in one model over the next, but the poskim assume that if a greater posek were to weigh in, that might legitimate asking somebody else. Now, within kavod, that makes a lot of sense, right? I'm not insulted. If someone asks me something and I say it's asur, and then they ask Rav Asher Weiss and he says it's mutter, I'm like, okay, I'm, you know, machulach. I don't, well, you know, that's fine. I don't care, right? Like, so don't listen to me. I'm not insulted. That's less obvious that would work within the formal models, unless you think that, like, the Gadol HaDor has more lotusser power, which, again, is not obvious that that's true. Because as we saw, the Ritva and the Ravid, at least, assume that that's not the case, that your local rabbi is invested with, right, the person you ask the shayla is invested with the power of lotusser, and especially if you add Rav Yisraeli's analysis of the Ritva's position based on his comments in Erevin, that's because, like in Shamayim, both are possible, and I've now invested you with the power metaphysically to determine my reality. I don't know how we got there, but by this point, I have done that. It's not clear that even a greater posek has, like, some more metaphysical reality, so it's not obvious that that's true. Even though the halacha, many poskim are more comfortable with this. What are exceptions to this rule? So again, I don't have time to get through everything, but there are certain very key exceptions. So for example, if a psak is just a mistake, then it's a mistake. That's not a psak. Okay, now what counts as a mistake? This is a sugya in and of itself. It's complicated. Right? In general, the Gemara assumes that there are different types of mistake. One is a Taot B'Dvar Mishnah versus a Taot B'Shikol HaDaat, where a Taot B'Shikol HaDaat is a mistake that doesn't necessarily reverse. But a Taot B'Dvar Mishnah does reverse. What the dividing line is very complicated. There's a very long Rush in a Balamor at the beginning of Sanhedrin, commenting the Sugya in Daf Hey. So that you have to really look into that. So I can send you Makarot on that in terms of what how egregious a mistake counts as a mistake. It furthermore has to deal with the question of whether something is itmar hilchata, right? Sometimes the Gemara says that kaven dol itmar hilchata lo kamar velo kamar, since the halacha wasn't said, David kamar avid, David kamar avid. Then the psak is open. You could follow this, you could follow that, which means that the shaila is fundamentally still open. But that also implies that there's a category called itmar hilchata, that once something is itmar, whatever that means, it is now closed. At what point is something closed? Such that if you paskin against it, it is a fundamental error and not a psak. So where would you draw the line? Where would you draw the line that something has been determined and now if I go against it, it is sealed forever? I am fundamentally wrong. Where would you draw the line? Okay, anyone else want? The Gemara, good. So the truth is that you'll find people who do everything. The Taz says that the answer is the Mishnah, not even the Gemara. Right? The Taz follows the Urzarua, Your Zeruah in two places, both in Hilchot Chadash and Hilchot Sukkah, says that no, even if something is in the Mishnah in Machloket, as long as the Gemara doesn't say the words Idmar Hilchata, even if it's clear that the Gemara prefers one view, Bisharat Chak, you are allowed to go back and paskin like the other day in the Mishnah. Not only does it say this theoretically, but he says it lemaisa. That is the Taz, based on the Zeruah's justification for why people are not makbid on Chadash and Chutz Laretz. In case you wonder, this is in Taz on Shulchan Aruch. That the Taz says the reason we are makel is even though the Gemara says Chadash and Chutz Laretz is usur, it seemingly means da'oraita, there's another day in the Mishnah, and since the Minag is makel, Kanirah, we're going against the Gemara like the Mishnah. That is a Taz, okay? Based on the Zeruah in two places, okay? I know it's a shocking position. I do not have time to go down that rabbit hole. At the other extreme, you have the Chazon Ish, who says, Shulchan Aruch, even he suggests, even though he doesn't really practice this, but in his Klali Psak, he suggests that even Machloket Shach Taz, Minag Aposkim is to follow the Shach over the Taz. So if you Paskim the Taz over the Shach, it's a mistake, fundamental error. It's not a Psak. Others draw it at the Gemara. Ramosha Feinstein is a stira on this. In one place he says the Gemara, in another place he says anything which is decided by the Poskim HaMefursamim, which is about as ambiguous as you could get, but okay. As I mentioned, right, so one of the potential questions here is, can another posik weigh in? So, again, Misvara maybe yes, however, the Shach says no. The Shach says no. That Afilu hu gadumin v'chachum minyan, he can not. Right? A greater posik cannot weigh in. However, he notes that the Maharik doesn't agree. And his diuk is, that the Gemara says, in chavero. The first posik's friend, meaning equal, can't weigh in. But that implies if someone's not your chaver, he's your rav, right? Or he's the gadol hador, then he can weigh in, but it's a machloket. There are interesting questions in the already in Shulchan Aruch and the Nosei Kelim, and again, you can read through it in 39 and 40. What if someone has a misora? Let's read a few lines in Shulchan Aruch here. Interestingly, and I don't have time to fully get into this, this halacha is never quoted in the Rambam and not in the Torah, not in Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah does quote it. Does that mean that the Rambam and the Torah do not believe that there actually is such an Isra at all? Right? I have no idea. Right? Most Ashkenazi poskim work under the assumption, even most Sephardi poskim, as far as I can tell, work on the assumption that we poskim like the Gemara in Avot Zarah Dav Zayin. But the Ramah does quote it explicitly in Reish Mem Bet and Lamed Aleph. But he says as follows, Chacham Shasar Ein Chavir Rashai Latir Mishikul Adat. He has another exception. Yesh Lo Kabbalah Shita'a, O Shita'a B'Dvar Mishnah. You can correct him with two reasons. Either he made a fundamental error, because then his psak didn't count, or if you have a Misora, that is another reason to override. And he paskins, Vafilum Tav Mishikul Adat, Yachol Yisav Litin Emorat Shiachzer Bo. And even if it was b'shikol adat, so it's not a fundamental error, you can try to convince the first posek that is allowed. V'lachein in isser l'shoel, and then following Tosvot, he thinks there is no isser to the shoel. It's on the nishal. The shoel, the Ramah thinks, is allowed to ask somebody else. But, poskening like Rashi, that there's a covet issue, u'vavad sheodiyo doshikvar hora rishon lesser, as long as you tell him what happened. Okay? Not all the achronim accept this, and again, I gave you the shach. The Shach, for example, puts a limitation on this and says, no. Asking someone else and telling him that he asked doesn't help. It only helps if you can convince the first posek to change his mind. Right? You can't ask somebody else, right? You can ask someone else to try to convince the first posek. That you're allowed to do. Probably the most important thing I can tell you, though, about the limitation on this is that so far we talked about certain limitations on this in cases where you make a mistake. But another major limitation that emerges pretty much as a consensus among poskim is that this only applies if something is a psak. And not every decision that you make is a psak. In general, in order for something to be defined as a psak, it needs to have a level of novelty, a level of your contribution. If you're quoting a source, that is just maramakom. It doesn't have a chalos shame psak. And this has two nafkaminas. One is here. The other major nafkamina is that you don't need to be qualified to paskin for that. Like a lot of the limitations on paskining, in terms of how much Torah you need to know, in terms of your Rebbe being there, things like that, do not apply v'davar ha'mefurish b'poskim. Right? Now there's two girsot. Right? In the Gemara, it's davar ha'mefurish b'psukim. But la halacha, the Shach quotes it as davar ha'mefurish b'poskim. That if somebody's mefurish in poskim, it's no longer your psak. You're just quoting the Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa. That's not a psak. That's a maramakom. And when something's a maramakom, it may not have the ability to create this chalos. The Aruch HaShulchan spends a lot of time on some of these questions of why it's not quoted in the Rambam and the Torah, what exactly counts as a psak, both in the longer, I gave you the full discussion, the Aruch HaShulchan here in 43, and I highlighted just the key lines in terms of 44 bolded. V'achzav ein lecha dvar arah she'ein la raya me'ezik maro eza posik v'rachuk b'chal lahorah b'svara ba'alma. The Aruch HaShulchan says this whole halacha, right, he's arguing why is it the Rambam doesn't quote it. So his suggestion is that it only exists in theory, but in practice it doesn't exist because there are very few psakim that you ever get nowadays that are mugdar kipsak. Even complicated shailas are just fancy maremakom. You're choosing to pass like Moshe Feinstein over Shlomo Zalman. You're choosing to pass like Ruvadia over the Tzitz Eliezer. If that's the case, that is going to be a huge limitation because it's going to say very few halachic shailas are ever really binding. Right? That is indeed a position of the Aruch HaShulchan. Not everyone accepts this. But if you want to see sources on that, you'll see that 44 and on, you'll get this. Now, if you want to go through the sugya in detail, so I will show you, you can get a pretty exhaustive discussion of this in 47, the B'nai Banim. He will go through many of the things that I mentioned and be mafalpel it, and go through many, many more Rishonim and how they play out here. Since I only have 3 minutes, I'll tell you what else is here. As I said, in 48, I gave you the Amud HaYemini, right? Which is Rav Yisraeli in his piece on the Chief Rabbinate of Israel, has a very long discussion on the nature of Psak as well. So I gave it to you there. There he gets into some of the issues on Mara De'atra. If you want to look at some of the more classic Achronish material, so if you look on Olamot's website, they have a piece on Chacham Echad Sha'asar where they just bring a bunch of Achronim, who bring some of the classic Nafkaminas we've talked about in terms of Kula versus Chumra, in terms of Gavra versus Chefta, in terms of what if you get the first Chacham to change his mind, and some of those Nafkaminas, you can see how some of the more modern Achronim really get into it. In the 2 minutes I have left, I will just throw out, as I said, all of this is explains conceptually why a psak can become binding. However, as I mentioned, in this case, it's clear that the authority that's given to the posik, however you want to come to it, and whatever limitations are placed, are because you asked the shayla. But like I said, the other part of this that you have to deal with is, okay, but what about when I'm constrained in who I can ask because of either Maradatra or Rebbe Movak? Right? Both of those are very complicated bizman hazeh. Rebbe Muvak is extremely complicated because according to most poskim, it doesn't exist bizman hazeh. The Lechem Mishnah quotes in Hey Dalet in Hilchot Talmud Torah that nowadays that most of our Torah comes from books. So our Rebbeim, our Sofrim, or right, Svarim, not Sofrim. In case you think that this is not, right, oh, Lechem Mishnah, that. It's not from the Lechem Mishnah. He's not the first person to say it. The first person to say it, as far as I know, was the Ri, Bala Tosfot. Why do people not know that? Because it's hidden. You need to know a lot of Bala Tosfot to find where it is. But when I took class with Professor Kanterfogel, he found it. Where is in the Ri? It's in the Hagot to the Smak by the Smak Mitzurich. In Kuf Yud Aleph, he quotes the Ri as saying the same thing. So the Ri, Hazakein, said that since his time, We relied on books. There is no halacha. The Aruch HaShulchan, for the record, goes 180 degrees. He says, no, fakert. Nowadays, information is cheap. And therefore, it's very easy to figure out who your Rebbe Muvak. It's the one person who taught you how to deal with that material. Right? It used to be, it'd be hard, because maybe you taught me a lot of Torah, you taught me a lot of Torah, you taught me a lot of Torah, but now information is cheap. Your Rebbe Muvak has taught you how to analyze. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, hafuch. Nowadays, it's very clear who your Rebbe Muvak is. Right, so that's an interesting shaila to deal with. There's a lot of material on this and very quickly in the Akdamah Yabiya Omer, you can see where he discusses the Agoda of Shlomo Klugor on the Eichel Avram, Simin Kuf Lamed Vav in Arachayim, where he discusses this as well and other ramifications of it. B'chulei. The other is Mar Da'atra, which again, in the Gemara was geographic. Nowadays, not clear that it should be geographic. This is a complicated sugya. If you want more on this, you can look at the beginnings of the change in the Rashba and Chelek Aleph Tshuva Reish Nun Gimel. The parameters of that Rashi were a little bit complicated. Rav Shechter has one opinion on it. Rav Lichtenstein is a different. You can look in my Enosh footnote 197, where he has a discussion of this piece. Rav Lichtenstein also in his piece on Justifications for Modern Orthodoxy, Centrist Orthodoxy, something like that. What's the name of the piece? Whatever it is. Whatever that piece is, it's in Leaves of Faith, the one where he talks about how the Rav, you know, bestrode the world like a colossus, that one. Whatever. He has these phrases. So in there, he argues that just the Rashba argued Bismano that the posek doesn't have to actually be in your place and therefore create a quasi-Maradatra model where to explain why people would follow the Rambam and the Rif as if they were the Maradatra, like in Teiman. Rav Lichtenstein then extends it from the Rav to the Kihila, right? That communities are also ideological, right? And therefore he thinks it's justifiable for a Belzer Chassid in Johannesburg to follow the Belzer Rebbe. It doesn't matter where he lives, right? So that is very interesting. There was an article by Kirschenbaum in Tradition years ago. Ray Brody wrote an article on it. Ray Helfgott wrote an article on it. I wrote an article on it. I can send you a Makarot on that, but that's also a very complicated issue, Bisman Hazek. That's another thing in terms of how you define that Bisman Hazek. It's very complicated. Part of this obviously is, okay, but this is all assuming you're asking a shaila. At what point can you paskin for yourself? That is a very complicated shaila, which has three factors. One is, what qualifies someone to be a posek, which is a huge topic, right? Big gadol. It comes down to how you understand two words in the Gemara, which is gamir v'savir, but that is a nightmare to try to define. The second is, even if you are qualified as a posek, when can you not paskin because of covet issues? And that comes back to the Rebbe question, because you're not allowed to paskin in front of your Rebbe, you're not allowed to, Rebbe Muvak, etc., etc. And then the third question is, even if you are a qualified posek, are you not allowed to paskin for yourself because of bias? And in general, there are two dayot in poskim. Either you're always allowed to paskin for yourself, even when there's bias, even though it might not be a good idea, but you fundamentally are allowed to, or you're only allowed to paskin for yourself if it's not huchzak yisura, which is the position of the chayadam, position of several of the achronim, nafkaminas. The most important nafkamina is that those poskim, like the chayadam, say that you're allowed to paskin your own nida shaylas, but not have siktara, right? You're not allowed to paskin on your own have siktara, because have siktara is huchzak yisura, is you're removing the status of huchzak yisura, and then afterwards you can. There are some modern poskim who actually paskin that way. Not majority of poskim, but there are some poskim more machmer like that shita. It's a discussion. It's a machloket tos from the Rash. Again, I can send you a card on all of these things. But I think I'm going to have to stop because I'm 3 minutes over. Anything you want, please send me an email and I will send you whatever Makara you want. This is what I got put together just last night when Reiserman said, okay, these are the topics you should cover. I've been teaching Pesach since I was in the Kollel and Gush and I have thousands of pages I can send you, but I'll have to stop there.